your fault. Baby, it's not mine. I chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. This evening we're going to be playing some clips on the news. Peter Strzok was interviewed by a Joint Committee of Congress this week. And he got some hard-hitting questions asked him, and especially around bias. Many of the questions centered around his emails with his girlfriend and fellow colleague, Lisa Page. So we've got some very, very, very tumultuous and rambunctious going on during this questioning. But we're going to pick out, we picked out some of the most cogent and the most relative quotes. This first one that we're going to play was Jim Jordan's questioning of Peter Strzok, and it brought up the fact that Bruce Orr, who was an associate attorney, was and wife originated together, passed on information coming out of the Christopher Steele dossier to the FBI, but it was verified by Peter Strzok. But anyway, listen to this a second. And Jim Jordan, boy, he's hitting hard. And then he was interviewed by John Hannity from London. But listen to this carefully and see what you think, and then I'll make some closing comments.
You said you did not personally receive documents from Mr. Orr, but the FBI did. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you also said the FBI got documents from a different source in mid-September. Different source than whom?
Different source from Mr. Orr. It was not Mr. Orr who provided the initial documents that I became aware of in mid-September.
So Mr. Orr did not hand you the dossier?
That's... Mr. Orr didn't hand me anything. Mr.
FBI.
Orr provided information to the FBI that included material that is what everybody's calling the dossier. Reporting from Mr. Steele.
Say that again. Say that sentence again. Mr. Orr provided what?
He provided some elements of reporting that, my understanding, is originated from Mr. Steele.
So Bruce Orr did give the FBI information relative to the dossier?
Yes.
Wow, that pause was very revealing. One of the more explosive revelations during today's marathon House hearing with disgraced FBI agent Peter Strzok joining us now with more Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan. Oh, by the way, Congressman Jordan, welcome to the club. If you support Donald Trump, you had to know the lies, the smears against you are obviously a political attack.
Yeah,
I'm sorry you're going through that.
Yeah, you've been through it. You know what it's like. So thank you.
Yeah.
But today,
I know it every day. It's all
of
us. Anyone that supports the president.
Exactly right.
And I'm sorry you and your family have to go through that.
Thank you. Today, think about that. Top DOJ official Bruce Orr actually hands parts of the dossier to the FBI. And remember, Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie, worked for Fusion GPS, who was paid by the Clinton campaign to put this entire dossier together. This is the first time, to my knowledge, that the FBI has admitted they got parts of the dossier from Bruce Orr, a fellow DOJ employee. That's scary.
And the wife of Bruce Orr, wasn't she one of the ones that worked for Fusion GPS that
all
had
summer
the
long
money that was funneled through Perkins Coie, that hired the foreign national, and that got Russian lies? Oh, Russia tried to impact the election through Hillary. Is that not true?
Exactly. Bruce Orr, fourth-ranking official of the Department of Justice. His wife works for Fusion GPS in the summer. He gets information, passes it to the FBI. That becomes the basis to spy on the Trump campaign. Plain and simple. This is the first time, to my knowledge, the FBI has admitted that, and it was good that we got some of that information out today. So this whole investigation...
The hesitation.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. He hesitated. Yeah, he didn't want to answer your question.
Sure did. It took me three rounds to get it out of him. But I'll tell you what, this investigation started flawed with the dossier, and Matt Gaetz had some great questioning where when Mueller gets rid of Strzok, it's now flawed on the back end as well, because Bob Mueller didn't even ask Peter Strzok about all these text messages that show his animus to Donald Trump, to President Trump. So Bob Mueller, when the day he fired him, it was like a 15-minute meeting. He didn't even get into the fact that Peter Strzok had written all these terrible things about our president. He didn't even get into that. So this thing was flawed when it started on this based on this dossier, and it's flawed here at the end based on when they got rid of Strzok and didn't even ask him important questions.
Just like Andrew Weissman, who lost tens of thousands of Americans their jobs, overturned 9-0 Supreme Court, four innocent people sent to jail for a year, overturned by Fifth Circuit, and gets excoriated by a judge for withholding exculpatory evidence. He's on Team Mueller. There's no team in America that could ever be fair with the pit bull like that. Let me ask you this. At the heart of this, was Hillary's investigation rigged? So the favored candidate's investigation rigged? And was this a specific attempt to basically steal an election, pretty much? The smelly people, don't let them win.
Yeah, well, we always thought the Clinton investigation was rigged. Now what we've learned in the last several months and from the Inspector General's report, we know it was rigged. And the same people who ran that ran the Russian investigation. They started the Russian investigation based on this dossier. This was such a key element to getting the warrant, the secret warrant, to spy on Carter Page associated with the Trump campaign. So it sure looks flawed from the get-go in that investigation as well, Sean.
Congressman, thanks for being with us. I'll tell you this.
I could say with Jim Jordan making some really hard question asking in there, it's coming unraveled to why the Democrats and for these people that have been participating. This Bruce Orr and Nellie were together, husband and wife, and now it's been testified by Peter Strzok that information from the Steele dossier came to the FBI from Bruce Orr, but Nellie was working for Fusion GPS that was putting together the dossier called the Steele dossier for $12 million paid by Hillary and her gang. So, boy, that is very, very interesting. What we've got coming up next is Representative Garmert from Texas, and he's alleging that Hillary's server had a special IP in there, that they were all the emails, but four were forwarded to an IP, a foreign IP, that was other than any Russian location, but they verified where it is. But these are intelligence people telling Gohmert, Representative Gohmert. He had it out with Peter Strzok earlier in the day, but he was interviewed later. And in that interview, he tells a little bit more in detail what he discovered. But listen to this, see what you think.
One of the Republican lawmakers there, Louis Gohmert, and things boiled over with him during the hearing. He blasted Strzok for the impact he had on public trust and the FBI and his personal behavior.
The disgrace,
Mr.
what this man has done.
The gentleman
to our
from
justice.
Texas will suspend for a
there
moment.
There is the disgrace. And it won't be recaptured anytime soon because of the damage you've done to the justice system. And I've talked to FBI agents around the country. You've embarrassed them. You've embarrassed yourself. And I can't help but wonder, when I see you looking there with a little smirk, how many times did you look so innocent into your wife's eyes and lie to her about Lisa?
Mr. Chairman, this is outrageous.
The credibility of a witness
shame
is always
Mr.
an
Chairman.
Issue.
Mr.
You
Chairman, please. There's
you Mr. know, Chairman, this is intolerable harassment of the witness.
What's wrong with that? You need your medication.
It was a free-for-all, and you heard that comment end, do you need your medication? Congressman Louis Gohmert, did you lose your temper, or did you intend to bring up his personal life decisions?
No, I didn't go into it intending to do that, but as I sat there listening to him so smugly, his little smirk, and he had lied repeatedly, and he knew he was lying, he knew I knew he was lying, and yet he still would lie. And I'm telling you, the unfortunate thing is about that last exchange I had with him, it may have clouded over a very, very important story, and that is that he was told by the intelligence community inspector general's investigator, Frank Rucker, that they had found an anomaly in the emails going to and from Hillary Clinton's unauthorized private server, and it was when they forensically examined the anomaly, they found embedded information, and it was a foreign entity, not Russia, but a foreign entity that was that was getting every single one of her over 30,000 emails.
So wait, Congressman, just to stop you
Russia.
There. Just
it
to stop there.
Russia.
So you're saying that in Hillary Clinton's emails, they were forwarded to somebody else?
Yes, and it was because they were hacked. And Horowitz didn't point that out, you know, the previous story, you know, that Comey gave us, well, it was not a good server. It was possible that it got hacked, but there was no evidence it was hacked. And then we find out, and that's what I brought out today, that the intelligence community IG brought it to their attention,
gotcha.
And they did nothing, nothing. And this is a foreign entity, not mm-hmm. related to Russia in the least,
right.
That is getting everyone. There were only four of over 30,000 emails
gotcha.
They didn't get. They were going to and from.
Congressman,
she compromised America's security.
Congressman, one of the many people who questioned Peter Strzok today and will probably question Lisa Page tomorrow at about 1:30 yeah. Eastern time. Congressman, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
That was Representative Gohmert, and he messed up a little bit there by that personal attack. But what he brought out was very important, and the fact was that over all but four emails were forwarded to an IP, a foreign IP, and that stands for Internet Protocol Address, but other than a Russian address. But this was going to some foreign entity, and but they've covered it up. And Horowitz and them, they had ample opportunity to look into this, but didn't for some reason. So anyway, there's more to this story, and it's coming unraveled now. You can see that every time that they get Peter Strzok and other people up there, they just start unloading, almost inadvertently sometimes, about this scandal. Anyway, coming up next is Republican Representative Rothfuss, and he asked some of the most hard-hitting questions of anyone at that hearing, of the Peter Strzok hearing. But anyway, listen to him. You can tell he's really a prosecutor. He asks questions you have to say yes or no to, and he didn't let Peter Strzok off the hook at all. But listen to these, and I know that it's possible that Peter Strzok was lying on some of his responses to Rothfuss's questions. But Rothfuss is pretty sharp cookie, far as I can see. Listen to this carefully and see what you think.
Mr. Strzok, you were the lead investigator in the Clinton email investigation. Were there ever any searches for emails with the ClintonEmail.com route on the government data warehouse that would have held data collected through 702 or other FISA authorities?
Sir, I would have to think about that.
Think hard.
Rephrase the question. Were there any searches of
the
Clinton email?
The IG report talks about servers that were you searched and devices that were searched. Were there ever searches done on the data warehouse system that would contain data collected pursuant to FISA or 702?
So when you say data warehouse system, you're referring to any FBI data system that would house FISA or 702 data? Yes, sir. I believe there were.
There were. Do you know if anything was found on those?
Not offhand, I don't.
It's not referenced in the IG report whether that was searched. On page 96 of the IG's report, it said that investigators learned late in their review that the FBI considered seeking access to certain highly classified materials may have included information relevant to the mid-year investigation, but ultimately did not do so. Furthermore, unnamed FBI Attorney 1 went so far as to say that review of those materials was necessary to complete mid-year, and even started to draft a memo about it. And per the IG, you thought reviewing those emails would have been a logical investigative step. Who stopped it?
I don't know. It was levels above me. My understanding was it was outside the Bureau that was stopped.
Did you object to that?
I disagreed. I wanted to search it. We're getting very close to classified information, so I want to be very careful.
Did you send an email or a memo to that effect that you said we need to search this?
Sir, I don't recall the nature of what that discussion was. I remember talking about doing it and wanting to do it.
As a counter-intel officer, did you know if any other non-DOJ government officials have reviewed the classified materials in question in this case?
Don't know.
Did any non-DOJ personnel communicate with anyone at the FBI or DOJ or to mid-year personnel about this classified material?
Sir, I can't answer that question without providing or without saying.
Do you know if anybody on the mid-year team, FBI or DOJ, ever briefed anyone at the White House about such classified material as a potential related to mid-year?
I don't know. I'm not aware of it, but I don't know.
Who had the most influence on mid-year investigators' belief that this classified material was ultimately not necessary and would not have a material impact?
Sir, those are two different questions. There's an investigative question, which I, as the leader of the team, which included the senior investigators, had a desire to do something. And then there was a decision at a much higher level and at a different organizational spot that was well above and over.
Now, this was all happening in May of 2016. Was there a rush to wrap this up?
This was not all happening in May of 16.
Well, it's according to the IG report, this was all coming out in May of 16.
Sir, there may have been aspects of that discussion in May of 16, but my recollection is that this was broader than that.
On page 96 of the IG report, it said investigators learned late in their review that the FBI considered seeking access to certain highly classified materials.
I think that says that's when the IG learned about it, sir, if I'm not mistaken on that reading. Sir, I don't remember specifically when this came up in the context of mid-year. I could not tell you when I first became aware.
And you were the lead investigator at mid-year, right?
I was.
Yeah, okay. During mid-year exam, did investigators find any emails between Secretary Clinton and President Obama, including any emails that would have used aliases? Emails that would have used aliases.
Yes.
Did any of those emails contain classified information?
With President Obama?
Between Mrs. Clinton and President Obama.
I don't believe so, but I would have to verify that with the case file, sir.
Do you know if any of those emails were ever intercepted by a foreign actor?
I don't know. When you say any emails, sir, are you talking about emails between Secretary Clinton and President Obama?
Yes.
Or any emails contain classified?
No, between Secretary Clinton and President Obama.
I don't know.
On page 149 of the IG report, it noted that he found evidence that you advocated for more aggressive tactics in the Clinton investigation, like grand jury subpoenas and search warrants. Ultimately, the mid-year team decided to go with the kid glove approach using consent agreements. I can think of some recent high-profile examples where federal agents did not use the kid treatment. Relating to mid-year, who specifically had the authority to decide not to use compulsory process to obtain evidence in this investigation?
Sir, I'm certain the IG did not use the phrase kid glove. The decision ultimately about whether or not to issue process rests with the prosecutor.
Did anyone outside of the mid-year team suggest to the team not to use an aggressive approach?
There was a constant debate, which is normal and healthy, between the agents and the attorneys about how aggressive to be. My recollection is that...
Anybody outside the mid-year team? You're talking about people on the mid-year team.
No, sir. Not that I know.
The time of the gentleman has expired. The witness may answer the question.
No, not to my recollection. There's nobody outside the mid-year team that was exerting any pressure one way or the other.
This is what we have in the Peter Strzok questioning, is there were moments in there that Rothfuss was asking that he was quiet, that he stopped the conversation. That's a signal that he's trying to think of how to lie his way out, in my opinion. I can't say, you know, categorically for sure that he was lying yet about it, but these are the points of the questions and answers that other investigators can go back into and then dig down into those aspects on both sides of the question and the answer and get a little bit better, you know, view of what's going on. We have Bill Binney that's been on several talk programs over the years. He's retired from the NSA. He's one of the highest technical people that they had, and he had a very, very overall knowledge of not only the programs but the technical side of it also. And there's a couple of clips coming up here that I'm going to be playing where he's talking about, it's very well true, he said, that Trump could have been surveilled. And I remember when the press, when Trump first asserted that he was being wiretapped, is the word he used, oh boy, the press really tore that to pieces, didn't they? But later on it's come out that yes, he was being surveilled and using FISA court types of orders, which we think now, and appears now, based upon a Steele dossier, which had many flaws and inaccuracies in it, and that was prepared by Fusion GPS for $12 million paid to Fusion GPS by Hillary Clinton and Nellie Orr, wife of Bruce Orr, Associate Attorney General, was working that summer for Fusion GPS and helping to prepare that dossier. So we've got all of these people involved in this. Sean Hannity, Fox News Network, has been on top of this the whole time. And anyway, we're going to be playing a couple of Bill Binney clips here where he talks about Trump being surveilled. It's very likely that he is being he's under surveillance, or they're recording his conversations. But anyway, listen to this. It's Bill Binney's tops. He's really a top man, in my opinion. Listen to this.
Bill Binney worked at the NSA for more than 30 years. He was a famous and highly regarded employee there, but he resigned in 2001, saying the agency was building illegal mass surveillance networks. He says that President Trump almost certainly has been spied on by the government, was being spied on, and probably for a long time. Bill Binney joins us now. Bill, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Tucker.
Just said in my intro, you spent 30 years there. You're not someone who's speculating, and you believe it's entirely possible that the president was in fact spied on?
Yes, in fact, they're taking in fundamentally the entire fiber network inside the United States and collecting all that data and storing it in a program for they call it Stellar Wind is the name for their program. That's the domestic collection of data on U.S. citizens, U.S. citizens to other U.S. citizens, everything we're doing. Phone calls, emails, and then financial transactions, credit cards, things like that. Yeah, all of it.
So if you found someone objectionable or dangerous, the temptation would be profound to locate information on that person and perhaps misuse it, would it not be?
Yes. And for example, inside NSA, they had a program called LoveInt. That's where the analysts in NSA looked into that data to find out if their lovers were cheating on them. That's the extent of the data collection that NSA is doing.
But, I mean, I grew up believing that NSA was not allowed to collect data on Americans. It was supposed to be outwardly focused on our foreign enemies. And you're saying that that's been perverted for many years.
Yes, since 2001.
So what do you make of considering what you just said is that the NSA has all the information? So presumably they could prove or disprove the claims about Russian tampering in this election. They could prove or disprove Trump's tweet about being spied upon. Why wouldn't they?
That would get into the extent of which they've penetrated the network inside the United States. There's another program going on here that not too many people are talking about. They're not even addressing. I think you were trying to get at it with your previous guest. Inside NSA, there's a set of people who are, and we got this from another NSA whistleblower who witnessed some of this. They're inside there, they're targeting and looking at all the members of the Supreme Court, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Congress, both House and Senate, as well as the White House. And all of this data is there inside NSA in a small group where they're looking at it. And the idea is to see what people have power over you are going to, what they think you should be doing or what they're planning to do to you, your budget or whatever, so you can try to counteract it before it actually happens.
I mean, that's just East German. And by the way, that's got to be illegal. Yes. I do not believe that that is legal. The oversight committees...
No, it isn't. No,
right, it's a violation. Supposed to be preventing that stuff. And I remember having a conversation with the former Republican chairman of the oversight committee, Mike Rogers, and saying this is a big deal and getting an answer in effect, well, you know, terrorism. That doesn't sound like this has anything to do with terrorism.
No, this bulk acquisition, by the way, is inhibiting their ability to detect terrorist threats in advance so they can't stop them. So people get killed as a result, which means, you know, they pick up the pieces and clean up the blood after the attack. That's what's been going on. I mean, they've consistently failed. When Alexander said they'd stop 54 attacks and he was challenged to produce the evidence to prove that. He failed on every count.
So, but the NSA is not, this is my last question, but and it's an obvious one, the NSA is not its own country.
You notice Tucker Carlson said NSA is not its own country. But what has happened, in my opinion, okay, is that in the 007 books, and this is conjecture, can't always prove all of this, but there's a high probability that something like this already exists, really. But Spectre was an organization, is an international cartel, criminal cartel, and they were operating at the highest levels of power and politics and money, and they had, you know, hit squads and everything else. But I think that that's what we're up against now. If we're up against something like Spectre was, as written in those 007 books. And, you know, like Tucker Carlson said, is NSA its own country, see? So anyway, coming up next is another interview that Bill Binney had, and he talks about the DNC. Now, just recently, we put up this indictment that has just come out by the Mueller investigation, and he's saying that they're indicting 12 Russians, and they have all this information and so forth, and about hacking the DNC, and they got all those emails the Russians did, and they were behind everything and so forth. Well, Bill Binney in this interview is saying that the download speed from the forensic report couldn't have been from a remote hacking computer. It had to be in the office or on a LAN network within that office of the DNC to affect the speed, the download speeds that the forensic people came up with. So anyway, listen to this carefully and see, you know, there again, listen carefully again. That's about all I can say. It's getting so bad. We're losing control of our country, and our privacy rights and our civil rights and freedoms are going down the tubes. So let's keep on fighting this fight, the good fight. So listen to this, okay? Here we go right now.
You've heard it all by now. In fact, it's pretty much all you've heard. Russian hacking, collusion, the undermining of our democracy. It's a relentless, never-ending theme in Congress, in the media. The only solution, we are told day after day, is an all-encompassing investigation continuing without end until the guilty parties are found and punished severely. And yet, let's go back to the core allegation. Some members of the intelligence community are not convinced it's true. The group Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, or VIPS, has been looking at the evidence of Russian hacking and says a lot of it does not add up at all. Bill Binney worked at the NSA for more than 30 years. He's a member of VIPS, and he joins us tonight. Mr. Binney, thanks a lot for coming on.
So, well, thanks for having me.
Well, just to be absolutely clear with our audience, what you're saying is not just that the president didn't collude with Russia. You're calling into question the core allegation, which is that Russia is responsible for hacking in to the DNC's servers. Why would you call that into question, since every smart person in Washington knows that happened?
Well, okay, I give up. No. First of all, when this first came out last year, about a year ago, I started opposing that simply because of the way the intelligence community was talking and knowing that the NSA, for example, has all the fiber optic taps across the United States and even around the world, plus trace route programs embedded in hundreds of places all over the network. So I knew they would know if packets were being passed around the U.S. or outside the U.S. or anywhere in the world, they could trace them and see who got them. I mean, they did that several years ago with the Chinese hack that came in and said it came from that building, I think, in Shanghai. Well, they could do the same thing with virtually any hack. So right away, I began to question that assertion that they were hacking into the DNC. Then we had a fellow who basically had access, it seems to me he had to have access to the network log of the DNC server, which means that any transactions going into and out of the DNC network log get registered or logged inside that log, and it goes into a list of what packets come in from what IPs and so on, and going back and forth.
Right.
So that to me said that from there he listed out the data, the raw data from the transactions in the log, which meant the time the transmission started, the time it ended, amounts of data of the past, and any other identifying IPs are buried in those packets that were passed, too, if the NSA would ever give them to you. But I think this is probably one of the reasons the DNC didn't let the FBI look at it, because it would show that at the rate, it was taken out at the rate of, 1,976 megabytes. Or it was taking out
make the point that it was moved too fast. Right, so it couldn't have gone out over the Internet. It had to have been taken directly in person from the computer, downloaded onto some sort of mobile storage device. So given that the NSA clearly doesn't have the evidence it would have if it happened, and that it couldn't have been hacked over the Internet, then why is everyone in government still pretending that's what happened? That's the confusing part to me.
Well, I guess it appears that many people are emotionally tied to this agenda to tie the Russians with President Trump and the Trump administration. One way or the other, they want to do it. So it's hard for them to give up that argument. I mean, it's like they're emotionally stuck with it. So, I mean, we in VIPS try to look at things straightforward, what are the facts, find the exact facts in the case, and then make a decision from that, not from other agendas driving us or anything that's motivating us to do or say things that we can't substantiate with facts. So, and that's the problem, you see. Everything that's come out about this issue hasn't been backed up by facts at all. The only facts we've been able to
get. Well, I've noticed that. So let me just ask you one last quote.
Yeah.
Right, they're generalizations, and you're supposed to accept them and then be quiet and just sort of obediently nod, and of course the intel community says that it must be true. As someone who worked in that community for your entire adult life, are you struck by how all of a sudden people who know nothing about how it works are demanding that everyone else accept these assumptions that have no factual basis?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard to believe, but I guess they're applying the old sophistic rule from ancient Greece, you know, when they would say simply repeat the argument over and over again from many different directions by many different people, and eventually it gets believed. That's the exact philosophy that Adolf Hitler had. If you're going to tell a lie, tell it often until it gets believed. Make it a big one, too. So, you know,
you have to be crazy not to accept it. I know. And let me just say for the record, I know some of the people involved in your group, and they're not Trump voters. So this is not some sort of right-wing group here, from what I can tell. Bill Binney, thanks a lot for joining us. It's nice to have someone on who actually knows something about the subject. That rarely happens.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, that was Bill Binney again. And so, you know, he has the technical and the authority, and he has integrity. And he's a fine person, so you can believe what he says. But there again, so all this stuff here lately that they've come up with on these indictments is very questionable, very, very questionable. And so we don't know how true some of this stuff is. Now, here's what I've noticed, and they're presenting this to Trump before he meets with Putin, okay? Vladimir Putin, president of Russia. And so they're injecting into this, the intelligence, groups are injecting into this a lot of unknowns, very questionable tactics and techniques and possible hacking done by the Russians. And so this is going to taint the summit that he has this coming Monday in Helsinki, Finland, with Vladimir Putin, president of Russia. And let me tell you what I think they're doing. There's two things. There's two tracks here. They're trying to keep them separated. And I think they are, because the Russians are owned to this New World Order that has been dominating the West for decades, if not centuries. And so if you ever get Trump together, he's against the New World Order, and you get Vladimir Putin together, and they start working together against the New World Order, the New World Order's got big, big problems, see? Because they've got to keep things stirred up. Now, the Russians are not nice guys either. And so, that brings it up right now, is I want to play a clip of a man that had real experience with Putin. And Magnitsky Act is what he talks about. And this is an important point to inject into this program this evening. But anyway, listen to this carefully, and want you to, because this man has a lot to say, and he's not BSing, and he actually had personal experience in Russia with the Russian government. It can be very, very, very cruel and very, very evil. So listen to this a second now, see what you think.
I'm not going in with high expectations, but we may come out with some very surprising things. We met him at the G20, and if we could develop a relationship, which is good for Russia, good for us, good for everybody, that would be great.
President Trump saying that he is entering Monday's one-on-one with Vladimir Putin with his eyes open. And my next guest wants to make sure of that, having experienced firsthand the brutality of the Russian strongman. Bill Browder ran a highly successful investment fund in Russia until 2005, when he was abruptly expelled and his company was used to perpetrate a massive tax fraud. He hired Russian lawyer Sergei Magnitsky to find out what was going on with his company and this infiltration. Magnitsky was then thrown into a Russian prison, where he died in 2009 after being beaten and denied medical care. He was 37 years old, and he left behind a wife and two children. Ever since, Browder has campaigned to punish Russia, and he says that as a result of this, he has become Putin's target himself. Bill Browder joins us now with a reality check into this man and how his mind works and what he likely wants to get out of this meeting with President Trump. Bill, good to see you back on the program tonight. Thank you very much for
being here.
Great to be here. You recently were arrested in Spain, and you believe that that was put upon you by Russian intelligence there, right?
Yeah, so about a month ago, I was arrested in Madrid, Spain. I was in Madrid to provide evidence to the Spanish prosecutor about money from the crime that my lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, uncovered and was killed over going to Spain. And about an hour and a half before the meeting was scheduled to start, some Spanish police officers showed up at my hotel room and took me in on a Russian Interpol arrest warrant. Now, thankfully, I was able to tweet out that I was being arrested. And by the time I got to the station, they were getting so many telephone calls from politicians and journalists, they realized that they had made a big mistake. And about 2 hours later, Interpol called them up and told them to release me. But this was the seventh time that Russia had used Interpol to try to get me arrested, to get me sent back to Russia so they could kill me like they did Sergei Magnitsky, my lawyer.
Yeah, does the FBI contact you about this? Are they in touch with the fact that everywhere you go, you run the possibility of being arrested by a Russian warrant, essentially?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different people on my side from different law enforcement agencies around the world, but I always have to be careful. There's a lot of countries that I don't travel to because I know that the governments in those countries are weak and would potentially hand me over to do a favor for Vladimir Putin. Putin is a cold-blooded killer, and Putin would love to get rid of me. The reason he hates me so much is that I was the person responsible for the Magnitsky Act, which imposes sanctions, freezes assets, and bans visas for Russian human rights violators. And because Putin and all of his cronies have so much money that they've stolen in Russia that they keep in the West, they really hate that more than anything.
You know, everybody remembers the discussion about the Magnitsky Act and lifting it from that June 12th Trump Tower meeting that Donald Trump Jr. took with some of these officials who were connected to it. But the sort of common knowledge is, oh, that's not really what they wanted to talk about. They really wanted to talk about dirt on Hillary. Do you believe they were really there because they were hoping to get some in to get that lifted?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, the one thing that everybody from that meeting, that Trump Tower meeting, could agree on in their depositions, and I've read all the depositions, is that the purpose of the meeting from the Russian side was to get the Magnitsky Act repealed. That was the main purpose of that meeting. We don't know what they offered to have that done, and we don't know if anything, what else was said, but we know that that's what they wanted. That's what the Russians wanted from that meeting.
This is a quote, from the New York Times, quoting Susan Rice from the Obama administration. Let's take a look at this, and I want to get your thoughts on what she said. His coming summit with Mr. Putin in Helsinki is a dangerous and counterproductive undertaking. The risks are many, and the benefits, if any, are difficult to discern. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't think there should be a summit at all. I don't think, I mean, I know I was just in Washington. I was just meeting with Democrats and Republicans, and there's not a single member of Congress that thinks that there should be a summit taking place. It's not, it just doesn't make sense to dignify Vladimir Putin with a meeting with the most important man in the free world. Vladimir Putin is running an economy the size of the state of New York. His military budget is 90% less than the United States. And he's making trouble all over the world. He shouldn't be dignified. He shouldn't be rewarded with this type of recognition.
There are Senator Graham was just here. He does think that the meeting should take place. So there are certainly some who believe that it would be a good idea. You have called Vladimir Putin Pablo Escobar with nukes, as you just said, a cold-blooded killer, a bald-faced liar. What would you tell President Trump as he goes into this meeting? What does he need to understand about this man and how to read him?
Well, I would say that when he goes into that meeting, he shouldn't be asking Putin for anything, because there's nothing that we can get from Putin. He should be telling Putin that he should stop doing the bad stuff that he's doing. He should pull out of Ukraine. He should stop all this nonsense in Syria. He should stop meddling in elections in the United States and the UK and France and Germany. And he should just become a properly behaved world citizen. If he does that, then he should be recognized as being a player, a normal player in the Western world. And if he doesn't, we should come down on him like a ton of bricks, which we have the capacity to do as the United States, as UK, as France. In the West, we're bigger, more powerful than Vladimir Putin, and he should understand that we will act if he doesn't behave himself.
Very interesting, Bill. Thank you so much. Good to have you here tonight.
I got to thinking a little bit about this latest indictment. And according to all of the really inside people and the knowledgeable people in the Beltway and D.C. and so forth, the Russians that are listed in that indictment will never be brought to justice. Because if they're intelligence agents, they're going to stay in Russia and so forth. And so what this could be, and it hopefully it is, it's a way to wrap up the Mueller investigation and probe. Because, you know, he has this indictment, and it does not mention Roger Stone in there, even though there was an interview with Roger that he's saying that maybe he was the guy that was listed in there. And, in fact, I have it coming up here in a second. But this may be a way of folding all of these things into, well, the Russians did affect, you know, they were hacking our election and so forth, and it was against the DNC and all that. But there were no Trump people involved. And that would be a nice way to wrap it up for the public to say, oh, yes, the Russians were doing this, and then Hillary suffered as an expense of these Russians. That could be it. Now, coming up next is an interview they had with Roger Stone, and it's very, very insightful. He stands up for what he believes in. So listen to this carefully.
I am Chris Cuomo. Welcome to Primetime. The Russians hacked the election. You know it. I knew it. This new indictment of a dozen Russian high-ranking officers makes it clear. So, will the president finally own the truth on the eve of being face-to-face with the man who ordered it all, Vladimir Putin? We have a Primetime exclusive with Roger Stone, longtime Trump friend and advisor, someone who appears to be the unnamed American mentioned in the indictment. Will he own that? And what is his advice to Trump in this all-important moment? Plus, Democrats, even some Republicans, are demanding the president call off the one-on-one with Putin. But the White House says the summit is on. A senator leading the charge to make it stop is here. What a Friday the 13th. Yep, that's what it is. Sounds. Let's get after it. So in less than 72 hours, President Trump will sit down with Vladimir Putin if everything holds steady at this point. I will be in Helsinki, Finland to report for you, but no one will be in the room where it happens, except Putin and Trump and arguably their interpreters. So Will the president put it to Putin? There is reason for doubt that he will. Why? 2 points. One, after learning about the latest indictment of 12 of Putin's people earlier this week, Trump still said the Putin meeting was going to be easy. Two, as recently as 2 weeks ago, Trump was still taking Putin's word over that of the U.S. intelligence community, something that he has done over and over.
I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story.
I believe that President Putin really feels, and he feels strongly, that he did not meddle in our election.
So, what will he do now? Let's bring that up with the man of the hour, once again, former Trump campaign advisor Roger Stone. Welcome to Primetime.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
All right. It's Friday night, so let's go easy to difficult on this interview. The easy work is that you are the man named, or not named, you are the man suggested in this indictment. I know you've said you don't think you are, but now, what's your answer?
Earlier today, before I had a chance to read this extensive document, I wasn't sure. But I certainly acknowledge that I was in touch with Trump campaign officials, and I have testified under oath to the House Intelligence Committee that I certainly had a 24-word exchange with the persona Guccifer 2.0 over Twitter direct messages. Anyone, any objective person who will read that exchange, which is included in the indictment, will see that based on content, context, and timing, it's benign, it's innocuous. So in retrospect, I think I probably am the person referred to.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you know, you put out the direct messages that you had with the person you now call a persona, Guccifer, and it is exactly what is in the indictment. I think we have it if we want to put it up on the screen for people. So clearly, the president, the government, in doing their investigating, is identifying these exact same communications, so there was no reason to ever deny it, Roger. It's you.
I never denied that it was me. I just didn't understand the earlier reference.
But well, you said, I don't think it's me because I didn't speak to high-ranking campaign officials, which when I read that, I found that hard to believe. But why fight it? Why not just say, yeah, this is me. I put out the direct messages. And they also say that there's no allegation of a crime.
Chris, I just did.
No, now, but you didn't initially. That's what I'm asking.
Now, much earlier today, before I had a chance to read the indictment, I misunderstood the reference. I think I've just clarified
Okay. Let me ask you something else. Earlier, you said that you didn't think that Guccifer had anything to do with Russia and that the government had nothing to do with the actions of Guccifer. We now know from this indictment there's only one Guccifer, and it's a Fugazi name for the Russian bad guys who are conspiring against the United States in its election. There is no other Guccifer. There is only one, and it's a composite of these bad guys named in the indictment. Will you own that now as a reality?
Well, an indictment, as you know, Chris, is an accusation. It's a charge by the government.
Yes.
It's not a conviction. Even in the even Russian intelligence agents in the United States have a presumption of innocence until they're proven guilty. I agree with something that Congressman Nadler said in the previous program with Anderson Cooper. I would like to see the Russians extradite these intelligence agents so we can have a trial, so the DNC server can be examined, and so this charge can be proven or disproven. If that doesn't happen, then I'm hopeful in the civil suit that the DNC has filed against me and the Trump campaign and a dozen others that will have an opportunity to examine the server to determine whether these comprehensive charges are accurate.
The server is a dark road of suspicion about what they wanted to hide and why. Let's put that to the side. Let's deal with
it. No, wait a minute, Chris. I think the servers are absolutely necessary for the government to prove their case. I think it's perfectly reasonable.
Well, if you read this indictment if you read this indictment today, Roger, they've got a ton of evidence linking down to the unit numbers of the GRU personnel who were doing the conspiring. Now, I know you can indict a ham sandwich. I get the whole deal. But this is part of a prosecution strategy, which I'm sure you've come across in the past, called name and shame. They know it's very unlikely that they get these people on U.S. territory so they can prosecute, unless the president demands it from Putin and uses it in trade for something maybe that Putin wants. Would you advise the president to do that?
Well, first of all, what the indictment doesn't have is any link to the Trump campaign.
But let's put that aside. I'm talking about Russian interference, and because the president always says, Roger, it didn't happen.
No. Let's not put it to the side. Let's address it, and then I'll answer your question. There's nothing in this indictment that shows collusion or coordination or conspiracy with Donald Trump or the Trump campaign.
Right, but it's not the point of the indictment, so it doesn't say anything about me either. That's equally immaterial.
The president made it clear earlier in the week that he intended to bring up the question of hacking with Putin. I think he intends to do so. He should certainly do so.
Should he ask for the extradition of the 12 people named?
I would not be opposed to that because I would like these charges to be either proven or disproven.
Do you think he will?
I'm happy to say. I have no idea. He has not asked for my advice in this upcoming meeting.
But if he did, you'd tell him, ask for the 12, be very strong with Putin.
I wouldn't be opposed to it in any way. I would like these charges to be proven. Otherwise, they're a public relations device in which they prop up the investigation and they make allegations that are yet unproven in a court of law.
Well, they are unproven in a court of law, but you can't read this indictment, I don't think, in conjunction with the last indictment that we had of almost a dozen people and the other indictments that have come out and the intelligence community assessment of what happened and the Senate Intelligence Committee assessment of what happened and not face the reality that the United States was hacked by Russia during the election. Will you accept that as fact?
No, I'm sorry. I think it is still unproven. There's an enormous amount of forensic evidence that points to a conclusion based on the download times that there was no hack and that the material, the alleged hacked material, was downloaded to some kind of a portable drive. I don't know. That's why I'd like to see a trial. The Nation magazine, in an extensive article based on the findings of Bill Binney and Ray McGovern.
These guys have had subpoena power and the complete tools of the United States government. They've been looking at it for months. They detail who did it, how they did it, how they conspired, the different types of malware they developed, the different ways they paid with cryptocurrency fake servers to funnel the information, how they approached WikiLeaks, who they call Organization One, not exactly sure why, and they refer to you and how you were approached, how they developed DC Leaks, how they developed Guccifer. They lay it all out. Why fight the conclusion? Because you're in a very small group now. It's really you and the president.
Well, actually, I don't believe that. Because
I'm saying in the relevant corpus of people. I'm making you relevant here, Roger. I know my Twitter feed is awash with people who want to believe every word you are saying. But I'm saying of those who should know better, very few cling to this idea that Russia had nothing to do with it.
Chris, I must already be relevant or you wouldn't have invited me to be here tonight.
100%. Next.
To address your question, there's no evidence in this indictment that I or anyone involved with Donald Trump received anything from the Russians or anyone who hacked the material and passed it to WikiLeaks.
True.
I don't know the people at DC Leaks. I don't think I've ever had any contact with them.
Right.
So in all honesty, for me, this indictment is exoneration because some of your colleagues in the media believe otherwise. And that is clearly not the case.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll say on this, given my understanding of these matters and processes. I don't know why they didn't name you in this indictment and charge you with things if they wanted to, if they thought they could make the case. I don't know why. I do think that you have a reasonable basis.
I know why. I think you have a reasonable basis
at this point to say if they didn't name me here, and they're obviously talking about me, maybe it's because they don't have anything on me. I think that's a reasonable position for you at this point, absent any further process by the investigators.
With all due respect, the reason I'm not charged in this indictment is because I received nothing from the defendants. I passed nothing on from the defendants. And my exchange with them, for, which is included, which any reasonable, objective person can read, mm-hmm. is benign. It's innocent. There's no evidence of collusion or conspiracy or coordination.
I agree. I just don't know why you won't own that the person that you were, whatever, the persona, as they call it, that you were corresponding with, were the Russians. Why won't you own that?
Because I still don't know that it is true to a certain
even degree. Though you never heard of any Lucifer before of any of this, and there's all this proof from the U.S. government that it was developed for this purpose, as stated in this indictment.
I think we've been round and round about this before. I think our intelligence agencies have been politicized, and I would like to see this proven in a court of law. I would admit that they have issued an extremely compelling and detailed indictment. But it's still an accusation. I said this on InfoWars earlier today. Mm. I would like to see a trial, and I'd like to see the DNC server. If we can't get it through a trial of the Russians, perhaps we'll get it in this civil trial, and we can get to the bottom of whether the DNC was hacked at all and who hacked it. I don't deny the government's made a compelling argument today, but that's still an accusation. It's not a conviction.
Do you think the U.S. president should use the same standard, that when his intelligence community and his intelligence officials and his Department of Justice all tell him, we know who did this, it's Russia, and the Senate Intelligence Committee says, we've reviewed it all, we're not InfoWars, but we're pretty sure they've got it right, that he should accept it instead of saying, nah, I go with Vlad. Vlad says he didn't do it, and he seems to really feel that that's the truth, so I'm open on it. You really think that's the right disposition for a president?
I don't think the president has ever said that, certainly not in those words.
When asked but about whether or not he thinks they did it, he said, I spoke to Vladimir Putin on the phone. He says he didn't do it. And he, like, left it at that. And then when he was asked about it again, he said, look, he really believes that they didn't have anything on the phone. He says he didn't do it. And he, like, left it at that. And then when he was asked about it again, he said, look, he really believes that they didn't have anything to do with it. Like, since when is that the basis of whether or not you're going to... So you, everything you've been told by your intelligence committee, the Department of Justice, Senate Intelligence Committee, all of it you weigh against the word of a man on the phone who was put at the center of the plot. Would you do that?
I hope the president will raise this question when he meets with Putin, and I hope he will press it on him. We have certainly interfered in Russian elections. We spent millions of dollars electing Boris Yeltsin.
But what does that have to do with what they did
in the Israeli elections? Well, because it is kind of hypocritical to say,
but then he could
say
that.
He could interfere in foreign elections.
Fair point. He could have said, Russia did it. I believe everybody else who's telling me this, who's in the business of knowing, which I am not, but we've done it too, so I've decided not to prioritize it. He's never said that. He said it a witch hunt, and we know why. He conflates what you're doing a little bit tonight, Roger, with all due respect, which is if it's about him, he wants this all dead. So there's no collusion. It's not about me. I did nothing wrong. Maybe so. Let's see what the probe winds up with. But there's a whole separate reality, which is they did this. An inimical state did this. Many different ways with lots of money and lots of intentionality, including trying to get into electoral results and trying to manipulate systems. That matters, too, even if it has nothing to do with Trump. Does it not?
Yes, it matters, although it remains to be seen whether their efforts in this country were effective or whether they were
ineffective. They were clearly effective. Look at us. We question each other at every turn. We question the election. We question what we're doing left and right. Who's telling the truth?
We were doing that before the election. We were highly polarized before the election.
I wish that were true, but it's not. Final point.
Again. No evidence pertaining to the connecting this to the Trump campaign in any way.
Nobody suggested
otherwise.
So if
they did, and if this is proven, even Mr. Rosenstein said today in his comments, there's no evidence that they affected the outcome of the election.
Nobody suggested otherwise. Silence. Roger, what I'm saying is, if they meddled in the election, that's enough. Their efforts are enough. You have to stop it. You have to speak truth to power. That's the role of a president. That's why I think it matters. That's why I wanted you on tonight, so that you could clear up your role in terms of this indictment and say what you think Trump should do. And I appreciate you doing that.
I think I have done both of those things, Chris. Thank you.
You fulfilled the mandate. Thank you, sir. I'll see you again.